Hey guys, my name is David. For the last roughly year or so, I've been a member of the PowerTech podcast, and I've trusted Eric and Andy to help me as a hockey dad raising my kids and trying to figure out the answers. I don't have all the answers, and it's a great source of information, and it's an area where I feel comfortable leaning on to help me make better decisions. With that said, one thing I do know about is supplements. I find it's hard to navigate the whole supplement world and make sure that you're using products that work, that are effective, and again, are science research based. Blue Star Products, incredible brand. Their products are based on research, science, the products work, trademark patent ingredients, and you can find all of the research just by scanning QR codes that are right on the back of the product. Thank you to Eric and Andy for their podcast. I think it's amazing, and definitely give Blue Star Products a try.
Talking fast forward.
Yeah.
Hi.
Hi.
How's your day today?
It was good, yours.
It's raining crazy shit outside right now.
Yeah.
Looks like there's a tsunami. Not to talk about the weather once again.
Yeah.
But I don't know. What do we got? What do we got to start here? You got anything you want to say to start?
I got a question.
Okay, go.
Since I've been on the ice all day, every day for the last 2 weeks, I don't think I took a shower today. And I'd like to look good for the podcast, and I didn't shave.
Yeah, scruffed.
Scruffed. And does it look like I combed my hair with a pork chop, or it's not bad?
It's not bad.
Oh, good. Okay, I feel better now.
Yeah.
All right.
I feel like hair is, you know, your subjective opinion about your own hair is tough. Yeah.
Okay.
Like when you think you're having a bad hair day, not you, Andy, but like right. You, anyone.
Yeah.
It like looks basically the same to everybody else, so I think you're good.
Okay, good.
I think you look great.
Good, I
you're
feel
a
better.
Handsome man.
Okay, I'm going to be good this podcast.
Yeah, now you're good.
You look good. If you feel good, you look good. No, what was it called? You look good, you feel good, you play good. So
yeah, good. Look good, feel good, wheel good.
Yeah.
That's what we used to say.
Yep, I like it.
Any other questions or opening remarks?
No.
No?
No, I'm good.
Cool. Okay, so this is episode 3 of our little series. We're going to hop right into it because we have a bit of a hard stop today. So this one we're going to talk about kind of identifying what you have as a coach. So maybe off the last episode, we were kind of talking about age appropriate coaching. So we went through each of the age groups and you were talking about, kind of what you should be focused on and then kind of some of the variables that come into play at each age group. So the one example is like the puberty age, body checking starts happening. And then the draft year with there's pressures of the draft and kids getting attention and agents and this kind of stuff. So now from there, I want to kind of go into as the coach, when you finally have a team, doesn't matter what the age is, being able to put a team together so that it's actually a team, more or less. And what you always say it as trying to identify what you have as a coach with the players and then all the players together, what kind of team will fit with that particular group. So I want to start with that. So maybe before we get into specifics, do you have any opening remarks just on the theme in general?
Yeah, like I think a lot of times coaching, like probably like anything that you do, you go to your default mode. So if you're like a motivator guy and that's what you always want to do, you always go to the motivating side. Or if you're a defensive coach, then you always tend to go to defensive. Or if you know one thing more than the other, then that's where you kind of lean on all the time. Yeah. And that's fine. But what you to have success in a group, you have to coach, like you have to coach to the strengths of your team. So like being that offensive minded coach, let's say, if you have kids that are not very highly skilled or slower or something like along those lines, then that philosophy may not work. So that's what I mean by when you have a team to choose an identity that, or to find an identity that would work with that specific group of kids. Cause every year, especially in youth hockey, even in major junior, right. I think college may be different, but when you recruit or you draft new kids, that could change the identity of a team. So you can maybe go from being a big fast or a big physical team to a smaller, really highly skilled team or a, you know, whatever, a really tough team. So your identity has to match those kids. So if you got guys with, you know, you got all these big wingers, let's say, and big D that are maybe a little slower and less sleek, you're probably not going to be doing like, you're playing like the Russian five. You might have to want to go in a little bit more straight lines and maybe more of a defensive structure. So that's the thing. Or else you're just going to get frustrated as a coach, and it's not necessarily the player's fault. because you know, and especially like when you get in positions where you're drafting kids, or you're, well, I should say even lower levels when you're picking kids, you pick them for what they are. You can't really necessarily change someone from being a fast guy to a defensive guy or offensive minded to defensive. I just use that for example.
Yeah, right. I was listening to a clip today of Rod Brendamore. I know you really like him as a coach.
I like him a lot. I do. Not in a weird way, but
yeah. And he's a unit, by the way. We talked about that before, but holy crap. So he was, I think he was at development camp because all the NHL teams just had their development camps.
Oh, was that recent clip that he had out?
Yeah. I think it was from there.
It was so good, man.
So he was talking about how development camp, he was basically saying, we're here to help you. So this week is for you guys to come to us and ask us questions and get as much out of us basically as you can, because we're here to help you. And he said, you know, 3, 4, 5 years down the road, if you guys come and play for this organization, now it's going to be, what can you do for us? So this week is about that. And then he was kind of talking about the identity of the Carolina Hurricanes and how compete is like his number one thing.
So
right?
Remember a couple weeks ago, we talked about that. And I said, in scouting, there's four pillars and skating wasn't number one. And that's, he just said it. He goes, the number one thing we're looking for is compete.
Yeah. And that's what he said. He's like, if you want to play in this organization, you might as well start now. So, you know, every time you step on the ice, we're looking for guys that are going to compete. We're looking for how much you're going to battle and all that kind of stuff. So right there, it's just a good example of the coach setting the tone off the hop and telling the players at the higher level, like, this is the type of player we're looking for. Now, at that level, they have the luxury of looking for that type of player. I want a guy that's really competitive, where if you're a AAA coach for a 12-year-old team in a small market, you got who you got more or less at tryouts, and you have to figure it out with what you got. And that's a kind of the difference, I think. But either way, just the fact that I might try to find that clip actually to put it, I'll layer it into the episode if I could find it. Because it was just a really good example of that coaching communication.
Yeah, and what I liked about it was, it's not for me, that's not rocket science. That's the mindset someone should have if you're trying to be a professional. But for a lot of people that saw that for the first time, they were like, wow, this is really good stuff. But that's what hockey's about. That's what it is right there, right? Yeah. Like, because that's what hockey is about, right? People, I think, sometimes forget that when they're, even at the lower levels, it's like, what can the team do for me? That's not the way it works. It's like, what can you do for the team? And I think the sooner that people understand that, then it changes a mindset a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. So I got a whole bunch of shit that we're going to try to get through today. I want to start on the team coaching stuff. So you kind of started talking about this a little bit in your little opening monologue there, about coaches going to their default, you know, they coach their style. And that was kind of the first thing I wanted to talk about is not being stuck with one style of coach. I don't necessarily know if that's the best way of saying it, because you have your personality as a coach. So if that's the same as style, like, not necessarily, but you need to be able to adapt to the players that you have to a certain degree. I think it's kind of what you were talking about. If you default to one communication style or one type of identity for a team, when that doesn't really suit the type of players that you have, then you're going to run into some issues. So maybe we can start on that, and then we'll start going through some more team stuff and identity stuff.
Well, okay, you know, just really what hits close to home is these groups, I have most groups that I deal with, like from a training standpoint, then we'll put them in kind of age groups. There's most of the groups are very, very responsive, meaning you say hi, they say hi. You say, you got the drill, they say yes. You got it, guys? It's like, yes. And then I have another group, like, for a couple years where it's like, I go crazy because when I speak to them, they look, and it's just the way they are in general. And almost to a guy, though. And, you know, I'll say, okay, guys, get in here. And it's like the air and the sound and the feel of the whole rink is different. It's almost like dead. And I explain a drill, and it's like I look in their eyes, and it's like looking in the eyes of a chicken, right? It's not like, okay, yes, coach, and nodding your head. So as a coach, I'm sitting there going, guys, like, are you guys listening? So I make them speak to me. I make them say yes or no, or else we don't start drills. But it's like very, very frustrating because my personality is like, hockey is hockey. Like, let's get going. And do you guys understand it? And I'm always grew up teaching my kid, teaching myself, teaching the players that it's very important that when a coach talks to you, that you look at them, you respond, you show them that you're into it. So for me, when I get that reaction, it's like, I question myself. So I as a coach have two choices, or maybe more, but I have a choice. I can get upset with them every single time, which I do sometimes, because it's like, how many times do you want me to go through this? Like to ask you if you're into it, that's on you. But anyways, so I have a choice of continue to do my way and frustrate myself, or kind of change a little bit, not everything, but change a little bit so that I can fit into their personality as a group. If I don't, it's just going to be a long, long, whatever we're doing, year, month, week, whatever. Right. So when I look at a hockey team, you can have that energy and you can, and don't ever change that. Like, don't change that part. But when your team's one thing and you want it to be another, it's like, maybe it's you that has to change. So
yeah, like there's got to be some play in the joints. Like, there's got to be some flexibility with how you do everything, whether it's communicating, how you do drills, the themes for your practices, the style of play that you want your team to have. Like, you have to be able to be flexible. And I think that's kind of like the new school way of coaching, because you talk about all the time, like the old school guys where it was like my way or see you later. And it just doesn't, I don't want to say it doesn't really work, because it can work, but it's not as effective as a long-term strategy for lasting as a good coach. And particularly when you're younger, like when you're older, not younger player, sorry, when you're a newer coach, like not as experienced, like you shouldn't be as rigid, because you don't necessarily know how to be a good coach yet, you know? So like if I'm a 20 plus year NHL coach, then it's like I have a little bit more leg to stand on being rigid about what I think and how things should go. But if you're like coaching your kids team for the first time and you're not very experienced, or you never played, or whatever, fill in the blank with whatever you feel like you're missing as in a coaching role, like you don't really have a whole lot of reason to be rigid about what you think. Like, you should be more in that growth mindset where you're trying to figure out the best way to coach.
I'm very malleable, flexible. But that's been more and more over time, because I realized that not everything I did 10 years ago I'm not saying I was wrong with things, but I could have been better in certain areas. And if I don't change, then nothing changes. But so speaking of the identity, right? It's like, it's really important, because you could want to have a team. You look at a team playing one way, but if that's not the guys you have on your team, the players don't match that identity. It's just you're going to be butting heads all year, or you're just going to be frustrated. So this way, it's really important to take an honest look at the team, and you know, it could be personalities, it could be talent level, it could be skill level. Well, that's the same thing. Could be size and all this kind of stuff. So, you know, for me. If I'm picking a team, my ideal team, I would have a bigger team, very physical, very competitive, and obviously high skill. I mean, is that the perfect team? Of course, but I would like the execution and the skill and attention and people just being really into it, so
and that
I could
high
play
high energy environment.
Yeah, so I could play that physical game, because I know that a physical team over the long run is has a chance to go deep. Into things, because they have a physical advantage more or less, and they're going to compete and all that stuff. But if I don't have that, I can't expect guys like from a town of like if I'm coaching an A team as opposed to a triple A team, and we're from a center of 30,000 people and we're playing the Toronto Marlies, I really truly can't expect. We could talk positive, right? We could talk positive and say no, we could play with anyone, but the reality is you can't. You're going to have to do something to compete against that team, and you're probably going to have a really hard time beating them. So if you're going to try to play like a smaller center, like even say a center like Windsor or Whitby or something, like that's a lot smaller than Toronto Marlies or whatever. So if you think that you're going to go play run and gun with them all day, it's just probably not going to happen, because you're going to have, instead of one really, really talented line, you're playing against three. And the 6D are going to be very, very good on the other team. So if you're run and gun, that's probably not the best idea. So you're probably going to have to figure out maybe some games you can try run and gun, but you got to know the defensive side and how to slow the game down and frustrate them, maybe physically or by boring them to death with, you know, dump ins and pushing on possession or whatever, right?
Well, let's get into that a little bit more, because I want to talk about like for people that are coaches, how to come up with the team identity. So just a couple things I wrote down, and then you can run with it. So the first thing is, we talk about like identifying what you have. So you want to communicate that whatever you feel like the identity that suits the team is, you want to make sure they know that, and you want to set the tone on it early. So like everyone is on the same page with that, right? That's how you start when you first pick your team. Then you want to develop a plan around that identity, like what suits your team best. And then you've talked about like different examples of teams where you've done that. So maybe pairing those two things together, and you can use an example or whatever if you want to explain it. Maybe just go through that process of coming up with a team identity. You can use like a young team that's no good versus an older team that's good, whatever, however you want to do it.
Yeah, two easiest examples that I could come up with are in youth hockey, two different teams that I coach. First one would be when I coached major bantam U16 or U14 or 15, whatever. Major bantam, minor midget in the States. The reason I had such a good team was because I trained a lot of those kids. And they were the best kids in Michigan. And when I decided that I would take that team, they were telling their buddies, the best guys, to come and play for my team. So that sounds like match made in heaven. You got the best players. And that's the truth, with the exception of some, there's a couple guys here, a couple guys there that stayed on their teams and stuff. But I had I knew I could play with anyone, anytime, anywhere. So that's good. So I knew that looking at, you know, our first practices, our first times getting together, I'm like, okay, highly skilled, highly, highly skilled, fast. We had like 2D that could skate as fast as any forward I've ever seen. Big guys too. I had forwards that were fast and skilled. So right then and there, I knew, okay, I've got a skilled, fast team, one of the best teams, so I'm not going to slow this down. I'm going to play to their strengths, right? And their personalities, to be honest with you, right? If I started telling my top 3 to 5 guys that we're going to slow this thing down and we're going to play a good defensive game, it's like wrong, right? So it was about playing fast. So that's what I said. I basically told him, I said, guys, I feel that we have probably the best team here if we work hard, if we do things right, if we follow a plan and play a certain way. And they bought into that. So our theme was, basically we're going to be a hard team to play against, but we're going to be fast, hard, and competitive all the time. So everything we did was with a pace that was incredible. Our practices were pace. Our games were pace, because it's like any team that played with us had to keep up to us. And even if we had, and then that was another thing. We had wiggle room to when we did make mistakes, because I knew that if Brendan Warren went down the ice and let's say he cheated a little bit or he did a high risk move and two guys are going to the net as opposed to one and one guy high, we had the D that could support that, the speed coming back and the talent. Plus, I knew we had someone coming back that would probably catch the guy with the puck.
Right.
So it was like there's a lot more
risk,
a little bit more high risk. Now, having said that, I still wanted to teach them the game the right way.
Right.
So that was that.
Just on that team in particular, because that was a really good team. Just for a little more context on how good that team was, just so we can make even more of a contrast. How many of those guys were either like drafted or went on to play major, junior, or college? Or like how many guys on that team were like
great team? So Morsey, OHL Blaisdell. Two guys that went to the OHL, maybe three. Two guys went to the OHL: Grant Gabriel, Karch. Four scholarships, four full rides. So out of that, six guys out of the whole. Oh no! And then Nikki Azar went to Harvard. So six guys had school paid for.
Wow. So that's on a U16 team. You got
nationals.
Your top 10
nationals.
Your top 10 all moved on to play. Yeah.
So to my ignorance at the time, I thought guys, I never understood individual, like being an individual. And what happened was we had so many good players that they were only a good team when things were going well for them. Not really the kids. That filtered down from mom and dad. So if this one guy that came from another team was on my team and he was the best guy on that team and he didn't really progress much that first year, like from the time that I had him, he went down the ladder a little bit. And he was a frustrating guy to coach because he was always catered to and he was always the best and have to have responsibility. Plus, he wasn't getting the first power play per se. He was, they were all used to being the number one guy on their team or number two.
That's exactly
so they didn't like
you.
That. So now there's another issue. So that was my ignorance. And then when things didn't go their way, it was like already thinking, okay, I'm going to go to another team so I can be the best guy. Not thinking that rising tide raises all ships. Yeah. So that was a tough thing to manage, but it was a thing that I had to manage. So as good as a team we had, we also had to manage egos. So there's like within talent, there's, and you see that in the NHL, right? You see that everyone wants to be the go-to guy when you think you are.
Yeah, well, this is what I was actually going to ask you this next is with that team in particular or teams that are just good, when you assemble a team of superstars, a lot of times it doesn't work for that reason because everybody wants the puck all the time and only one guy can have the puck. Everybody wants to be the spotlight guy that plays all the minutes and all this kind of stuff. But you can't have a team of all those guys because now that happens, the conflict. So maybe talk a little more about that. Like what were you, was it kind of reflecting on it after it was over where you kind of realized that was going on, or what did you do in the process as the coach to deal with it?
Well,
basically,
I was a little bit ignorant on the parent side. That was the biggest thing because I could talk to the kids, no problem. I can get it. I could sit down with you, Eric, and say, listen, Eric, can I be honest with you and tell you what I think of you as a player? Yes. I think you're a great player. Do you want to score goals, right? Yes. Okay. Look at our lineup. These guys are just naturally going to score all these goals. But we can't just have everybody just scoring goals. And I said, honestly, Eric, if you want to get to the higher level, you're going to be better off than probably those guys because you're going to learn how to play a complete game. You're going to be able to learn how to play both ends of the ice, maybe some penalty kill. Even though I know mom and dads don't think much of penalty kill, they think that's for the secondary guys or the defensive game. But if you do, as we talk about, become a complete player, then you might have a longer career than any of those. And because you do have some skill, maybe the projection of you being maybe a third line guy in college or junior, maybe because you have skill too, they're going to say, oh, well, Andy has that. You maybe move up to the second line, but you have a better chance, not a better chance, but you give yourself more opportunity because you can play both sides of the puck. Yeah. So that was something that the kids would be like, oh, okay. But then you get a kid come down and say, yeah, my agent at 14 and my dad, or the dad would come down and say their thing. And it's like, they forgot about the team concept. That's the biggest thing.
Yeah. So if you remove the parents, cause you can't really control the parents, but you kind of dealt with it going like the individual coaching route. Like you were just take kids individually and try to explain and communicate with them. That's the best you can do because at the end of the day, they go home and hang out with their parents for the rest of the night and then it is what it is. But that was kind of, would you say that was kind of what you feel is the best strategy for dealing with that like all-star conflict, for lack of a better term?
Yeah, to me, it was just being true to myself. Like, you know, I could have just buckled and said, okay, whatever, you guys do whatever you want as long as we win. And keep everybody happy and tell you, yeah, I know your kid's the best. I'll get him on the power, but whatever, right? But for me, it was about being true to myself because like as soon as you start stepping out of who you really are and what your beliefs are, then that's where you're going to have like a ton of problems. So if I just wanted to be a people pleaser, then you can't please 18 people. So some people are going to have their feelings hurt, and that's okay. Not that I ever want to do that to someone. But and you know what? Some kids prove me wrong. Not wrong, but I don't want to say they proved me wrong because I always believed in them, but they were feeling at the time that they were getting shit on, but it's just there was someone better at certain spots. So like the one boy got a scholarship at Ohio State and then went on, he played the U.S. national program, and he wasn't my best defenseman at the time, but he was a great defenseman, but more offensive. So I put him in offensive situations, less defensive, but he wanted both.
Yeah.
So,
right.
Yeah. So it's just a tough thing. But then, so my other side of it was when I coached Charlie those young years, those 2 years when he was young, it was a complete opposite. We had kids that we had one good player, two that were okay, and the rest were just like, they weren't going anywhere. Like it was a tough thing. And then we only had one guy I had to cut for the team. That's fun. So if I wanted to keep my philosophy as being fast and playing fast and, you know, risk reward, not worried about because the talent was so good, that had to go out the window. So the philosophy for that team was, and then what do you say? Do you say, okay, you guys aren't very good? That's not how you approach it, right? So you create an identity that's positive. So it's like, okay, guys, here's what I think. I think we got a lot of hardworking guys. And because it's a small town, you know, I said, we're a bunch of guys from Essex, you know, we wear rubber boots, we drink well water, we're gonna be a tough defensive, hard team to play against. And this is how we're going to do it. So the identity was, we're going to be just, it's kind of miserable to play against. They're little guys, but they took pride in it. It being hardworking and stuff like that. So, and then everything about that development was, like, as far as a system goes, was not to let them just freewheel all over the ice and make mistakes. I taught them how to kind of win with that identity. And then with that, as they did things well, I praised the things that they did well because they were getting better. Sorry, what was I thinking there? And then from the practice, from practicing and drills, I had to start from the absolute basic. So these kids couldn't put one pass together, let alone two, like not even close. Like the mechanics of that was horrible. And by doing good repetitive small drills to gain their confidence and stuff, honestly, it took about 2.5 months and they were zipping pucks around. It looked great. And then they were able to play like that. So it was like started from like just getting their confidence, and then they were able to do things. But just like a player that is a meat and potatoes guy, like my buddy Jimmy Sandlack said, he goes, if you're a crusher and you try to be a rusher, then you'll be an usher. So it's the same with a team, right? If you're a team that has this identity and you have a little success somewhere else and then you try to be that, that's not what you are. You got to go back to your basis. So that's what we always did with that team. And we had success, like huge success with that team. So both teams had success. All coaching.
All coaching.
No, it's not all coaching, but it's part of, a lot of it is because you're playing to your strengths or weaknesses.
Well, and especially when the kids are younger, like you can have a lot of pull on that as the coach. But one thing I was going to say is how maybe we can talk a little bit about coaching in games and practices and kind of what you focused on in terms of the team, not so much individuals, for keeping that identity like at the forefront. So just one thing that I noticed is like even in workout groups in here when we're on the ice, we were just talking about it yesterday, like the attention to detail, it just gets leaky after a while. Guys
for
get
sure.
comfortable, they get for in sure. the routine of doing things, they stop focusing for sure. on what's going on. So what kind of things would you focus on as the coach in the practice setting, in the game setting, to kind of tighten them up around that identity? Again, like sticking more on like the team stuff. So whether that's certain drills you would do or what kind of cues you would use and those kinds of things.
Yeah. Okay. So my really good skilled team, I always started off with drills for the first 15 to 20 minutes, sometimes half an hour, where pucks were just zipping around with tons of pace. So that was like number one, because that's where they feel good. Right, that's where they feel good. Then I could slow it down, or I could change direction into like a forecheck, a backcheck, D zone and stuff, because we already did the stuff we were good at. And then it was just tightening up like a power play or a penalty kill or forechecks, and it was like just getting into the details and then like giving them shit or giving them instruction or coaching when it wasn't right. But then like that's good right there, boys. That's awesome. So it was like always doing things to their identity, and then looking at games, right? So if we played a game and there's things that weren't done properly and I was trying to explain in the game and it just wasn't there, or the work ethic wasn't there. And that was the other thing with the high skill team. It was like always making sure that they didn't get comfortable just because they were good. It was making sure that they were pushing themselves basically every practice so that they were getting a little bit better, so that they understood that their pace was everything, and without the pace, their skill, things get bad or things can go wrong, right? You don't want to just turn it on and off. So that was a big thing. And then, so after a game where they didn't have, like, to say the back checking was not great or the D zone was kind of lax because they could do that, then I would hone in on that and say, this is where we need to get good if you want to play at the next level, because I could speak to them in that language. Whereas the younger team, it was always about starting off maybe slow. Like, I mean, some pace to get them going, but starting off and taking that pace and then adding to it.
Yeah, building.
Building on it. So if they can, yeah, because you could go in there and say, like, it was, for me at that point, it was always better to go one step. Like, if they were at level 3 this week and we go to their next practice, I don't want to start go to level 5 because I think they might get it. I want to stay at level 3 and then, I can add this one aspect to it. So now, and then military term, slow, smooth, fast. So if they can do it slow, then they could do it smooth, then we could add some speed. And that's what that was my philosophy really with them. And then it was like praising them when they did it well and making them feel good about it, right? And then the technical side with them is, we ran through it all the time. And I would ask them questions, and they were young. Ask them questions. Okay, what do we do if it's here? What do we do if it's here? And they would give you answers, and they were eager to do it because they were learning, right? They were really engaged in learning in the game.
Yeah, yeah. So I wanted to ask, this might go more into the individual stuff, but we could probably go there anyways. So what if you have a guy that is either doesn't fit that identity or maybe doesn't want to fit that identity? Like they're resistant to the style of play. So for example, you're saying like your dream team would be the bigger, rough and tough. And obviously they have skill, but that's just a very common thing when you ask guys to do the gritty stuff and do the shot blocking, do the forechecking, do that stuff. Really easy to shy away and not really buy into that. So that would be in the negative light, but maybe not even being negative, but with that younger team, you said you had one or two players that were maybe didn't really fit on this team. Like the rest of the team wasn't really, they were way above the rest of the team. So maybe kind of talk about what do you do if you have players that don't fit in that theme that you have for the team or in that identity.
Are you talking good or bad?
Either. So do both.
Okay. Like, so good is the easiest one.
Yeah.
No, I shouldn't say easiest. It's, I think it's the one where you can probably talk them through because you can use leadership and how the team follows you because you're the best player or one of the best players, if you want to use that term. So if you get them to understand like that, these guys are counting on you to do your job well. And if you don't do it, nobody else will. That was like the easy part, right? The kids that didn't have the talent, let's say from a talent standpoint, they just couldn't figure it out or they didn't have the brain for it or whatever, then I would just find a role for them. And I always use the one example on that poor team that we had, that this kid just couldn't have a brain for hockey. So I said, okay, but you're fast. So instead of saying, you know, you just don't get it, kid, I just changed the tune to make him feel good. Not make him feel good, but to help the team and to make, again, I guess, make him feel like he was important. And I'd say, you know what, when you're on the ice, I don't even care what you do. Just go wherever that puck is. I want you to go at it as hard as you can. And he did. And for him, it was good because he didn't have to overthink. And the guys on the ice with him knew that's what he was going to do. And he had some success out of it because he was like took a lot of pride in his one job that I gave him. Right. And then he might be on a breakaway. You know, he's not even going to hit the net. He might do something just like you go, how did that even happen? He might be on a breakaway, but a guy ahead of him, he would never give him the puck. He didn't see it. But, you know, we live with that, but he did some good things. So we took pride in that. And then he got to the point where he was actually not bad at penalty killing. So I could throw him out on penalty killing because it gave him a role. Go chase the puck wherever you want. The other guys will do their thing. And it worked, right? And the guys knew it. And I didn't put it in a negative way for him. So that's good. Now, if you've got someone that just resists refusing to do what you want, that's a whole other issue. And that's that issue is more like, okay, now you need to be coached. But now this is that equal fair thing. If you don't do what the, like, of course you teach them the leadership, teach them the principles. See you, boys. We had an audience here today. you teach them the principles of leadership. You teach them how important the team is and the team concept. And if he still doesn't want to buy into that or try to, you know, he's thinking more of himself and all that kind of stuff, well, then the consequences have to be something. So that's fair and equal. That's where that argument of fair and equal just doesn't add up. He doesn't just get to play the way he wants because it's youth hockey. Like there's 16, 17 other guys on this team that are doing it properly. So until you do it, at least try to do it, I can't reward you. So which one would you like? I'm not saying I'm sitting him for 3 weeks, but there's consequences to not being a team guy.
Yeah, and I think the coaches, they get stuck sometimes if that player happens to be their best player. Right. There's a tricky situation.
But you know, but that's a really, I'm glad you said that because I wasn't even thinking that right away. Because that happens a lot. Because they think that their leash is longer. It's because I can score the goals and stuff. But I'm telling you, as a coach, and you will get resistance from the parents and maybe even other parents. But you will do him a total injustice if you don't correct it. If you don't teach him that. And even if here's the thing though, even if he doesn't follow your rules or he doesn't toe the line with you, you planted a seed whether that's 9 years old or 12 years old or 14 years old, he's heard it all year that you need to be a team guy. This is the defensive side is just as important as that. Don't cheat on this or whatever the, you know, don't slam your stick because you're the best or all those little things. If he's heard it multiple times from you, you've planted a seed and you've done your job. Right. But then, but the top guys have to buy in, man. Like it's important. Some guys will have a philosophy. Yeah. But if we win the game and he scores the goals, who cares? Cause whatever. But if you're trying to make him a good hockey player long-term, not short-term, then you have to address those things. And trust me, parents will resist. They're going to think you're the dumbest coach in the world. I've been there.
No, I know.
And I was right, by the way, yeah. Every time.
Yeah.
Right.
Because, I remember that too, though. Cause yeah. The guys would, and to your point about other parents even getting upset, it'd be like you're costing us a win or a game because you're not putting the best guy on the ice or whatever that could get us a goal. And like what's the point? Like this is where it's like what's the point, right? Because parents get real caught up about like development, but then when the game starts, it's like well now it's about winning, you know. So the parents are just as at fault as coaches and teams are with that. Development versus winning thing because they all want to bark about development when they're not in that setting. Well, it's like, this is kind of part of development, man. You got to learn how to play the game properly.
Development's a buzzword. Eh?
Yeah, I know.
Like, I'm not trying to be like a Joe Cool guy here, but it is. It's a buzzword. If you say development, what does it mean? Pylons? Does it mean what? Winning games? Does it mean...
What should mean learning to play the game right. properly.
Yeah.
That's what it should mean.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of that. Like, I guess the question you want to ask both as a coach, as a player, not both, all three things, coach, player, and parent. I guess the question you want to ask is, do I want to be a really good player or do I want to be the star today and not actually improve my game to the point where when I get to junior or when it actually really, really matters, that I have to relearn it there, right? And I'm not saying that you have to coach that they're perfect players, but... Habits like laziness, bad body language, selfishness, not being a team guy, that's selfishness, I guess. All those things, not listening, doing your own thing because you can, those things need to be dealt with, at least from your point so that you've done your job. Because if you don't, then it will, like, here's the thing, it will bite you in the ass at some point when you just think you're too good. I've seen this not hundreds of times, like hundreds and hundreds of times where you were just thought you were better or you just didn't have to learn that part. And being really honest myself as a player, there was times where I said, yeah, like D-zone as a kid, I always worked hard, but it's like the details of it, I didn't really have to because I could kind of piss around or get it when I wanted to or score a goal that was
better.
Sick.
Yeah.
But did it hurt me in the end? Like I fixed that. I learned, but why didn't I just learn it myself or have a couple people around me, like family or friends that say, no, this is why it's important. It'd be great to have that around. Right.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. So I think we're kind of getting into that individual coaching side, which is equally as important because I think a lot of times coaches will focus on the team stuff and they kind of neglect the individual coaching piece and that particularly like the higher levels. And I think it's kind of like we said before, once you get to junior and up, it's like it's a job now and like there's money involved and people are trying to win and they don't necessarily have to care about what you or what's going on with you individually. But I think at youth hockey, it's even more important because exactly to what you were saying, you can set the stage early for teaching them good things. So within your team, you get your team identity, and then within that, you should be trying to plug in some individual coaching to give the younger kids maybe a role is not the right word, but a role or have their own personal identity. So maybe even within that, those two examples you gave, the young team and the skilled team, how did you go about coaching individuals to have their own role or their own identity or something they can take pride in? Like the one kid you gave as the example that was fast, whatever, like that's a good example of that. But maybe you could talk about that a little bit more on the individual side.
Yeah, well, the individual side is, to me, is what is the game changer. Like, because you can talk to a group, like just naturally, right? If I'm talking to a group, if I'm standing a certain place or someone's got my attention, as a player, then I could be as I'm speaking, I could always be looking at that person, and these guys over here or over here might not even think that I'm talking to them. It's like, oh, he really gives a shit about Cam. Like, that's all he cares about is Cam and that guy. He keeps looking at them. Or maybe that kid's going, why is he staring at me so much? Right? Like, that's the group thing. So, but anyways, the message is for the group. But then if each kid doesn't have somewhat of an identity, then they're kind of lost, or they don't know the importance of it, because everyone can figure out real quick who the top couple players are. Right. So is it all about them, or is it right? So what makes me important? Right. So that's why it's very important, like within that identity, that people have roles. So when you, like, let's take that younger team that I had, it was like, well, first of all, I made sure every single practice, every single game with every team I've ever had is that I'm not saying the whole team, but there's individuals for two minutes, 5 minutes, 10 minutes where we might talk. Could be a goalie and say, how you doing? Like, not seeing a lot of shots, or you're seeing a lot of rubber, you're doing well. It's like, what's going on? Is there something going on in your head? Just talking to them, letting them know, like, oh, he actually noticed, right? It's important. And then it could also be like actual coaching. Like, first of all, I think it's important to find out how they're doing as people first, because that's a good thing. But then ask them about their game, or tell them what they, you know what, Eric, the last couple games, do you know what I love about your game? Is like your forecheck and your backcheck have been outstanding. Like, you keep doing that, like, dude, you give us a chance to win. That you make, like, so you're a third line guy, right? That makes all the difference in the world for our team. The way that you're doing that, and when the guys see you do that, everybody else wants to do that. So that guy now all of a sudden feels like he's important. And then, of course, you can be specific to what they do on the ice, like, you know, center, winger, shots, stick handling, whatever it is. But anything good, point it out. And then, Eric, I just told you about how great you are. So, you know what I think? So instead of saying, but you're what? Give me something here. But you're not going to the net. So instead of saying, but you're not going to the net, and you need to do that or else whatever. Just another way of saying it, not saying this is how we have to, but if there's something that you could do, you just gave him some good stuff, just make it better. So, you know, now what I think would make your game even better, Eric, so you're forechecking so well, you're backchecking so well. I can probably guarantee that the next couple of games, when the puck's in that zone, if you start driving that net real hard, you're going to get a goal, or you're going to be around the net getting some points. I can see it happening. And that kid's like, oh, okay, maybe I'm going to try that. It's like one task. So that's how you just build an individual. And you could do that with over the course of two, three practices, two, three games a week, or one, two games a week. Let's say four touches a week. You can pretty much get to every guy. Do you know what I mean? And it's critical. And then you do the same thing with the best team, right? It's like, you're doing great with this. Or it's like, if you see, like, you have nothing really good to say, you just go into it. Like, dude, you know, I think you're a great player, right? What, like, anything going on? Like, anything going on in your life? Because it just seems like you're tentative or whatever. And then maybe they talk to you, or maybe they don't. But it's just important, because they know that, number one, that you care about them as a human being, care about the team. And then the other thing is always reflect on how, like, this is the one thing that I think players, if you're doing a hockey interview with a team interviewing you for a position or anything like that, I think it's really important to be true to it, but to understand that if I give you advice, it's like for you, but it's to make the team better, and always sending that message. Eric, this here and here will help the team. The team will help us win. Like, your role will help our team win. That's how important this is for you.
Yeah. I mean, it all comes down to that common theme of communication. But two things that you were kind of talking about there. When you first come up with the team identity, then for the individual players, kind of what you're talking about is it's not clear how do we accomplish the goal of the team identity as an individual now. So, for example, you have a team that's really fast. So if I'm a right defenseman, well, I'm a defenseman. Like, how do I play fast? What does that mean? It's like, well, don't dust the puck off, move the puck quick. It's like, oh, I didn't even think of that. I thought of just skating fast.
That's right.
Right? So it's like,
or closing gaps fast, exactly, or getting on pucks, right? Fast, because you're faster.
Active sticks, like, yeah. Sticks in lanes. That's all stuff that closes the time gap for other players, right? So even without skating, it's the appearance of things happening quickly, right? And so that's just one example of you're giving someone a specific thing they can do, whether it's their role or their identity or whatever it is, to fit in with that team identity that you've outlined. Because if you say, okay, we're going to play fast, there, it's like what does that mean? I don't really know what that means. Skate fast. It's like, that's, I get that, but like, what does that mean otherwise? So that's really important. And then the other thing you have wrapped all up in there is that relationship building piece. And I think that is just like the core element of having a really good team, is having the guys think or feel like they're connected with each other and connected with the coaching staff. Because if you don't have that, like the guys, if your buddy doesn't want to like go to bat for you as a teammate, then like all the identity stuff, all the role stuff doesn't matter, because you're going to be in it for what's good for you, and they're going to be in it for what's good for them. And it sounds like with that better team that you were talking about, there's a little bit of that going on too, right? Where it was like, they're happy as long as it's going good for them.
100%.
Right?
100%.
So I think
they're
having
all stars.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And to a certain degree, it's like, if you have parents from on high baking that into them, then that's tough. But as the coach, just building those relationships and making them understand like you care about their success personally. And that goes beyond hockey, man. That's like you mentioned, again, like asking about their day, what's going on in your life, what are things that are happening?
Tell jokes.
You know, yeah, yeah. Crack a smile.
Joke around. Like, know a kid's personality, you know, like one guy, Dougie Blaisdell, that played on my Bell Tire team, then he played in Kitchener Rangers, played for Sudbury Wolves in his overage year. I love this kid. And he was a big boy. Not big boy. He was like a taller, hit puberty early, but like still, it was a 6'1 guy. And very, very talented, right? And he ended up, was very, very talented, got a ton of points. OHL, I think he had 4 goals as a defenseman, but he ended up being a shutdown. So that's my point, guys, everybody. When you think talent is this, when you get to the highest levels, you go, oh, okay, like there's a lot of me. So anyways, we had such a good, like I love these kids, they were great, but like that, the battle was the parents, if anything. But when we were in the room together, on the ice together, and doing our thing as a team, it was like the best, because they were 14, 15, and I could talk to them not like a 14-year-old, because they're hockey players in the room and my culture. I talked to them a few years older, right? And it was the best. So one of the things Dougie heard me say one time is like, we were kind of in a battle in a game, right? And it was like, come on, guys, like we're better than this. So in between the, you know, I said, okay, let's do this. You guys, you know, whatever, like not a pep talk, but like, let's get on it. So I said, show them where the, like, guys, let's just show them where the bear squats. That's an old coach from a long time ago said that to me. So Dougie loved it. So every day he'd always come up to me, he goes, is that what they say up in Sudbury, coach? Is that? So he'd always say that to me. It was just like a nice relationship thing. And it was like, you know, embrace that, because the kid loves you. Like, he loves that line. You made him laugh and he just wants to be your buddy. So like all the time I do is look at Dougie, come on Dougie, show him where the bear squats today, bud.
Yeah,
okay, coach.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
we had joke names for our power play, like it was, I don't want to say them, like they're nothing bad, but I can forget the exact words, but it was like, okay, this whatever the title was is out there, and they'd love it, right? Like, it was just relationship building. We had fun. It wasn't all, you know, arms crossed, eyes crossed, ears crossed, nose crossed. It was like, I was very stern with certain things, but it's like, let's have some fun, man. It's hockey and you guys are the best.
Well, that's the kind of stuff that ends up being what makes it enjoyable. And that's the kind of stuff, it wouldn't seem like it, but that's the kind of stuff that gets you buy-in, right? That's the kind of stuff that makes the guys listen to you. Now, obviously there's a fine line where you can be too much their friend now. And then that's like one of the Jocko principles, like close, but not too close. But those are the kinds of things that make them want to play for you, and it makes them want to be involved.
Right. But you know what, though? Like, there is a fine line. There is.
Oh,
it totally,
yeah, for
is.
Sure.
But there's also a line where it can work to your advantage, too. Because if you and I, like, just our relationship alone, right? Not alone. But but our relationship alone, it's like, this is how it is all the time, joking, yeah, around, like nothing's, yeah, really, it's easy,
yeah,
right? But if one day I say, Eric, dude, like this pissed me off, or you don't know, this is unacceptable, boom, you're gonna look at that and go, oh
right away, yeah,
okay, I'm tightening that up, right? Yeah. So it's like, there is a line, but maybe a little bit farther than you think.
Yeah, for sure. And as,
but if you're just a goof.
That's what I'm saying. And over time, it's like for us, because we've been working together. You've been training me since I was a little kid, and I've been working with you since I was 16. So it's like over time, it can get even more loose, because now we just know how to roll off each other with what's going on day to day, right? But yeah, as a coach, then there is actually a fine line. So you want to make sure you're not going over that. So you talked about kind of helping to create an identity for the player, then communicating that. And then kind of the same thing, like reinforcing it throughout the season. So you set it up early, right? And then throughout the season, you want to keep reinforcing like what that player is and why they're valuable. Because like kids, especially the young ones, like they need reminders. Like they forget really quick. And then there's also like a little bit of, if you haven't shown them some love in a long time, then they can feel like now you don't like me or you're mad at me or whatever. Some love. Is that what did it? Yeah. You know, you got to show them some love.
Yeah, you got to show them some love.
So I think those things are really important. So is there anything else on the individual side that you think is worth mentioning, talking about?
One other thing that I've always done as well is like from a team standpoint, I would send out an email, tried to do it not every week or whatever, but like sporadically send an email to the parents and the kids together. It would be more like really proud of the group. I think this is what we've done. Like, so that's kind of like, might sound cheesy or whatever, but it does. Parents and kids love their hockey team, yeah. Right? They want to be part of it. And it's like, I love getting something from the Guelph Storm. I love it. Yeah. Right. I get to hear, oh, what's going on? Like it's my kids' team. So knowing that, oh, you know, this is what we've accomplished. The kids have done these three things extremely well. And this is one of the things that we were set out to do. Yeah. Or maybe our record is this and that's great, whatever. And then individually, I'd like to do that too. Send some notes here and there. I'm just real proud to the parents even, you know, real proud of Eric today for, you know, he's really come a long way. I've given him a role and he's actually doing this, this, and this. And I said, I just want to give you a heads up that I'm really, really happy and, you know, proud of him. And I hope you guys are too, or stuff like that.
Yeah. So that actually leads right into a couple extras I wanted to touch on.
Okay.
And you can, we can kind of rapid fire these a little bit just to finish up, but you can, if there are differences by like age, then maybe you can point that out. So the first thing, it's all this kind of stuff. So just because you were talking about, you know, reaching out as a coach, so talk about like the either like scheduling or like team building activities and all this kind of stuff. So what are your thoughts on those types of things in terms of helping to build the team identity? So yeah, like, what do you think about that kind of?
You know, if I'm being honest with you, I've never really done with those kids, like as far as I can remember, maybe I did, but that was probably not my wheelhouse, because I don't like to do pretend things, and I didn't know if that was actually valuable. Like when I see some of the stuff that people do for team building, I'm like, okay, it's like anybody can do that.
This is exactly why. Sorry to cut you off. This is exactly why I wanted to bring it up, because I think a lot of parents, coaches, it's like just taken as a given. Like we have to do team builders. Without putting a lot of thought into it. And then to your exact point, it's like, we're going to go to the movies. It's like, okay, like, is that a team builder? Or we're going to go do this thing, random activity, and we're going to call it a team builder. And like, I get the point, like they're hanging out to a certain degree, whatever, but is it actually useful for what we're talking about?
Yeah. And I think the other thing with that is like, I'm not saying don't do them, because there's some valuable things. Cause I did a leadership course with a whole bunch of kids. Actually, Ars was saying, the Ars that works for us, he said, did he tell you about the kid? One kid that he listens to the podcast still, I did a leadership thing and he decided to go in the military. And from that, he told ours, he goes, Andy changed my life. Really? From leadership. And yeah, you know him. I'll tell you after. And I'm like, that's so awesome to hear. Like, it's so awesome to hear. But that was age appropriate, maybe. He was 17 and he was able to get the principles. So, like, I did some stuff that I learned from the military through a military person. That was with me that time. Not a Navy SEAL, but a JTF. And he taught that stuff. And I like, the messages were good. They were good and simple. It's about being a team guy and like what happens with a weak link and all that stuff. And it made sense. But it made sense because my youngest student was 14, right? And that was a mature 14. If the McPhersons were there, right? They got a lot out of that. So if I did that with 10-year-olds, that probably wouldn't make sense. But maybe. So I don't want to have to really explain that. But to me, the team building or the team bonding would be when you're together and just doing, for me, it's more of a natural thing. But the team building, actually, so it could be right in a game, right? That kid that blocked the shot, this is a team builder. if you just sit there and go, don't notice that,
right,
then why would he ever block a shot? So if the guy block a shot and we get up there and we're banging the table, it's like, that a boy, he feels good. That's team building, right? I'm a part of this thing. Yeah. They recognize me for doing something that I didn't think was a big deal.
Yeah, let's go from that, just because you mentioned it. Let's go to like the idea, like leadership stuff and talking about captains. So like picking up, picking team captains and teaching leadership stuff within this kind of context.
Yeah, we're gonna go 50-50 here on people that listen. People are gonna say, no, you need a captain. We just talked about this the other day with some people. Some people use it as a recruiting tool. Some people think it's very important to have a captain because you need a leader. So my question is what's a real leader when you're playing minor peewee hockey, 14 hockey? What is a leader? What is a captain for? And, you know, we can say, yeah, you can rotate it around, but does that give it value? You can say that if you do it as a learning experience, like give a captain to one guy a week to just show him responsibility, that might be a good thing. But for me, I don't even, like, I'm being honest, I don't even know, like in the NHL, this is probably more controversial than anything, but in the NHL, what is a captain? You wear a C, you're the lead, everyone's a leader. So what is it? I think it's more of a face of the team. But I think you could take a lot of guys. I mean, some guys are not captains, right? But I don't know, like, necessarily, I guess Steve Yzerman was a captain. But that's the NHL.
Yeah, and I think
that's the NHL. That's not even
face of the team, marketing,
right?
Like
marketing,
that kind of stuff.
Being the face of the team and stuff. But like junior, I guess there is some marketing and stuff. Junior college and stuff, and their leaders stick out like a sore thumb. But the problem that I actually see quite often is leadership is not always because, or the captain is not given always because he's a leader. A lot of times it's because he's older. A lot of times it's because he's the best. A lot of times it's because it's a political thing. I never like using that word. Political. So it's like, what really is the captain? And because someone's not a captain, does that make them not a leader? Right. So for me, I would rather, and for me, the one time that I did it under duress, I regretted it. And I regret it to this day with that Bantam great team that I had in the States. And not that I regret the guy that was a captain. If I were to do it again, I would give it to him because he did a great job. But I just think it's unnecessary. I really do. Everyone's a leader or should be. And if they're not, who cares?
So what about,
not who cares, but
yeah, no, I get what you mean. So if we're talking about, along those lines, setting up your team culture, the environment, and then, enforcing or like having accountability as the coach. So, I think it's fairly straightforward. Like a lot of these things we talk about feel like common sense, but there's certain behaviors that are appropriate and certain that are not. So how do you think about, or what do you think about setting that up off the hop with your team? And more in terms of just like behavior with each other and then like away from the rink, like you're staying in hotels, you're doing this kind of stuff in youth hockey. So kind of what was your philosophy on that and how did you set that up? And if you want to kind of dovetail again, that with like team rules and those types of things.
Well, okay. So first of all, I don't like the team rule stuff is all great.
Mm-hmm.
But if you say, for example, we need you at the rink an hour before the game or practice, it's like, okay, why? Why? And I'm not saying that's wrong or 10 minutes before is fine. That's whatever it is. It's like, why? Explain like the life lesson. Do you know what I mean? Every time you have a rule, there should be something that, not every time, but when you have rules, it has to make sense if you want to build leaders, how it applies in life, right? So I just gave my guys, okay, I'll just tell you a story. Yesterday with my junior guys, I talked to them today because I was snapping yesterday. I didn't want to really snap because I wasn't really in the mood. But today I called them out on it. I said, listen, guys, we've been working together now like for years, but like this year, the off season, we've been working together for, since some of you guys may, we're in the end of July. Said what happened? We did our skill. That's all good. Now it's getting to a different point in our training. So I wasn't thrilled yesterday. I said because this is what happens over a little bit of time. We get a little bit leaky on the details. So I said I was talking and I saw guys. I was explaining a drill and I was going through the details and you guys started to walk out. Oh, yeah, I already know. So I don't like that. So it's disrespectful. That's what I told him today. It's disrespectful. When Dale talks and you guys are talking to each other and not looking at him, it's like what you're doing to this coach here is you're saying, I don't really care what you say, I already know. So right there as a coach, I don't like you right now. You do that a couple more times, I don't have time for you. So that's why you always want to pay attention. So that's like a philosophy, like it's a rule, but it's more of a philosophy, but the philosophy that's going to help them later in life. Because I don't know one coach, one teacher, one person in authority, I don't even want to use authority that or leadership that respects or enjoys someone not really paying attention or not really that interested in what you have to say. The other thing was like when we did the one drill, we did the skill thing. We had some toys on the ice, just a little bit. And then we went to go do a flow passing drill. And there's cones all over the ice still. So that's when I was snapping a little bit. I saved it for today. I said, like, you guys are adults. I said, like, would you like me? Just like, I'll explain the drill and I'll get every puck set for you. And then I'll pick up the cones and stuff. Or we could maybe 20 of us do it together and get it done in a second. Like, this is where, right? So it's the principles of it. It's giving them shit and teaching them rules. But it's also, like, respect where you are. Respect who you're with, right? So when it comes to, like, rules of the team, I mean, the common sense stuff is, like, there's body language. Like, my teams are not allowed to talk. I've said that. These are my rules, right? You do not talk to the other team. You do not talk to a coach. And they're like, yeah, but he chirped me. I said, that's right, so you don't. Because to me, in life, talk is cheap. The more you talk, the cheaper you are, man. So we saw that at a Spitz game one day. This team and this team, they're yapping how they're going to beat the shit out of each other. I said, well, you can. Just go do it. Don't talk about it. So what the talk does is devalues what actually the action is. So it's a lot easier to go and punch someone in the face than to say, I'm going to punch you in the face. Right? So the talk, and then if you chirp at a ref, I don't even know, like even from a coach's point of view, I don't know how that helps. I don't know how it helps yelling at a ref all day. Maybe at a different level it does. I just don't see how. Because if you're chirping me all day, like I want to get you back, man. So I think it's just better to not. Body language, it's like that negative body language, or if things don't go your way, it's like every time you do that, you've made the other team stronger. It's like, I got this guy, man. Look at him. His shoulders are strong. He's frustrated, right? And it can play off of that. So like those are the little things, like rules that I had, right? And it was always like the general stuff, like be good to your teammates, you know, say yeah. Hi to your coaches, like all that kind of stuff. Normal, please, thank you.
Yeah.
Be a good human, man.
Oh, and then how did you deal with, like, because they're like the rules, but they're not rules. Like, I know, I get what you're saying. It's like a philosophy thing. It's like buy into this is how we do things around here. So then what was your philosophy around accountability, like enforcing that kids do what is expected? Like, did you ever have any situations where like kids just weren't buying in, or did you have to deal with any conflicts like that between players?
Yeah,
or anything
well,
like that?
just a couple. One of my rules is you don't lay down when you get hit. Don't lay down. And I had a kid on my team he was one of the superstars that wasn't a superstar anymore. And he said, yeah, but I got a penalty. I got them a penalty. I said, yeah, I don't like it. I don't like it. You're not hurt. I don't like it. So I dealt with him. You know, he missed some shifts and I reamed him because you're embarrassing me. Like, this is my team. This is what we are. We're playing it fast. We're good. We're tough. We're not going to lay on the ice because someone slashed us so we can get a penalty. No, we'll put the puck in the net a different way. That's my philosophy. Yeah. Don't embarrass me. And that was the thing, is don't embarrass me or the organization. Don't do it.
Yeah, so I don't want to, I'm not trying to pin you to like one answer, but if, because I know it's very like circumstantial and how you do keep people accountable for things, but like sitting for shifts or giving them or ream them out or just pulling them aside to talk to them, is that like those your go-to methods for dealing with those kind of things?
Yeah, I would. I didn't like off the cuff just decide you're missing shifts. I didn't think that was fair to kids, because kids are allowed to make mistakes. Kids are allowed to have the bad body language or say, oh, I thought that was good for the team and I could just get upset with you. Do it again, then we're going to talk about it. But then I've had some, like I go, I'm kind of more of a reaction guy, because sometimes a rule is a good rule and sometimes it doesn't work for the situation. So I remember one time with these young kids, I have a thing, like, you know this, if I'm talking to you as your coach, if you're not looking me in the eye, if you're not paying attention and you start looking at other stuff, like I'm fuming. So this one kid, we're in a, I think it was a playoff game too. We're young. And I was going over the thing, cause it's important now. This is how we are all going to do it. So I was like this, this, and this. And I said, hey, well, I'm not going to say his name, obviously, dude. And then he did it one more time. I said, hey, dude, just go and get undressed. Huh? I said, yeah, just go get undressed. Tell your parents that you're done playing for the day. And that might have been extreme. Never did it again. And his dad said, what happened? So I was explaining something very important over the game. He kept so, and I warned him once or twice. I said, get off. He goes, okay. He was fine. Because I had the respect. So he never did it again. Every time I talked after, he was I'm like, okay, that's enough. Like, you look so well. No, you know what I mean? It was changed. So sometimes, like, extreme, sometimes not. But it was like, I didn't say this happens of this, because I do it with my kid, right? If I catch you with a beer, you're grounded for a month. Really? Really? So if I ground him for a month, is that really appropriate? Because I said so?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I'm not saying I'm right. That's just the way I am.
But it's also picking your spots too, right?
Because
if you're always going to that, then now you don't have the respect anymore. Now you're just an idiot, right?
Yeah. Or can we talk, right?
Yeah, exactly. So the last one I want to touch on was, what about like picking assistant coaches or like team staff?
Well, I'm glad you said that. I think it's really important that you have good people. Are you asking me what I'm looking for or...
Yeah, well, yeah, in the same context of just like the team identity, or you have your philosophy as a coach, right? You have your philosophy as a coach.
Yeah.
So how do you pick guys that, if you have the option, because sometimes you don't.
Yeah, most of the times in my experience, you don't have a good option of getting people that are actually going to enhance your life. A lot of times you get assistant coaches because they want to be on the bench and wear a jacket. And I'm not cutting them up. They're just good for pushing pucks. If you can find someone that wants to learn or wants to get involved or has some value, then 100% take them, as long as they got a good philosophy. But you just have to know who's in charge. And it's not like I'm the boss, you listen to me, but you got to understand that if you're a leader, people will follow anyways. But I'll tell you, honestly, I told you this the other day, I believe, is that we did a camp where I should have had one more guy on the ice, because at the end of the day, I wasn't able to get to everybody as much as I would like. And I felt like that's no good, right? I got to everybody, but it's not the way I wanted. It wasn't as deep as I wanted to. So just for me, having guys that are going to be able to, like, so the guys that want to have the jacket and push pucks, if you give them a role to do it, they'll take some pride in it. But that gives you the chance to, like, as they're doing that, you can pull guys aside and teach, right? So that's why I think having assistant coaches, one too many is better than one less, if that makes sense. As long as you have good people, and I mean, that's up to you to decide what good people are, but I mean, I think everybody can figure that out. Sometimes you need a clown. Sometimes you need a guy that's serious. Like, there's a good mix. But for me, it's like someone that wants to be there and help, and preferably someone that wants to learn a little bit from
it. Yeah, you've talked about that before too. Like, if you, let's say you're not a great communicator by nature, or you're not super inspiring or motivating, then you can use your assistant coach as somebody to balance that. Whatever, you talked about that.
Yeah. So when I coached at Beltire, I had great assistant coaches. One's an NHL scout and an OHL scout and coach forever. He's awesome. You know, Kevin, right? Great assistant coach. He had the ability that I didn't have of when he watched the game, he was able to just break things down what the other team was doing, so we can counter that. So I appreciated him so much. He was so good at doing it. I'm like, thank you, man. Like, and then had another one that was a really good X's and O's guys. That was awesome. So I could do a little bit of everything, but be just a leader and do my thing, right? Make decisions. Then when I coached the Charlie's team when he was young, I had guys that didn't have a clue about hockey. Not a clue. Dude, not a clue. So I would teach them everything. But what was great about it is they were able to take the team when I left and they had a clue. But I would say, okay, so Matt, I'm going to get you to be in charge of the D, or no, the forwards, because my son, no, the D, because my son was a D, so I went to the forward side more, coached everybody, but I said, okay, here's the five things I wanted to work on, and look at this, and just harp on these things. So that's what they did. They just kind of learned a little bit of a role within, it wasn't in detail, but it was like little things, right?
Yeah, and that's great, because that plugs right in.
High guy. It was like so the one guy doing the forwards, like, we need a high guy. He's got to be high. It's like, okay, not all the time. Like, sometimes this happens. Oh, okay. Yeah. They learned, right?
Yeah.
So it was great.
No, that's funny, because that plays right into what you were saying about the team identity, the individual identity, and then even with your coaches, like giving them a little bit of a identity or a little bit of a role within that structure as well, right?
Yeah, so, I think people that coach, you know, they want to do it. Obviously, want to know the game. People love the game, and they coach sometimes because it's their kids, but sometimes they're volunteer guys that want to come in and be part of it. But I think they do want to learn. And if you're a head coach that, you know, you just use them to go get your water and all that kind of stuff, that's not very valuable. Like, you can teach them things, and it's very small things. And then when you do treat them like an equal, which you should, then they actually feel like they can voice something to you, because even though they might not have the experience that I had, they sometimes came up to me and might read a kid a way that I wasn't reading them. I go, yeah, you're right. Or they see something that I didn't see because of the game. So I have empowered them to do that. And it's like, yeah, great job, man. Like, awesome. And I take, even though their hockey knowledge was almost zero, I would take information from them, and they appreciated that, right? So I just think it's really important as a leader. That's what a coach is. A leader is, you make people feel important and give them tasks, right? They're still adults, but if you give them a task, you make them feel better. They feel better about themselves. They feel like they're valued on the team. It's very important.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I think those last few that we touched on, those could be like whole other like episodes. I know we'll talk about some of those things again and some of the other ones that we have coming up. But I think that's good for now. Is there anything else you want to touch on with the like team identity stuff? Or
no, I'm good.
Good to go?
I'm good. Yeah, I think it's good.
Okay, sweet. We'll see you guys next week.